I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14. That's BASSGOD14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show. On this episode, the Rogues, Eric Alexander, who is the Chief Financial Officer of Bad Bob Productions, and Dave Beatty, a professional comic book artist whose credits include such titles as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and Grifter, were joined by special guest Dr. Hugo Strange. Dr. Strange is head of psychiatry at Arkham Asylum.
Here we go. We're going to start off talking about the latest episode of Star Trek Picard, Episode 5, Stardust City Rag. We're going to start off with general impressions for the show, how we felt about it, generally speaking, avoiding spoilers. We'll get into some spoiler talk here in hopefully a couple minutes. So starting off with general impressions, Eric, why don't you tell me what your general impressions were of Stardust City Rag?
Well, it's interesting. So I have to kind of put a little bit of a disqualifier on my general impressions. I got spoiled on this episode immediately. What happened was I'm pretty active on Twitter, as I mention a lot on this show. And what I've been doing is I've been trying to avoid watching Picard too early because I want to make sure that I kind of give my freshest perspective to this show. And of course, it's hard being active on Twitter and having so many other folks on Twitter that are themselves content creators, huge fans, and a lot of them watch the show immediately when it comes out. And so without even trying, I got spoiled pretty bad on this episode right when it came out. Now, I think that actually had a good effect because I found out about the most shocking elements of this show before I actually watched it. And I think if I hadn't been spoiled, I think I would have a very different reaction to this episode than I did watching it yesterday. So I will say this. This is a very uneven episode. And what I mean by uneven is not like the quality of the episode per se. I think Jonathan Frakes did a good job directing this episode for the most part. There are some issues I have in particular with some of the dialogue that we'll get into in the deep dive. So I'm not really holding Jonathan Frakes to this, but I'll explain it a little bit more in the deep dive. But I think it was competently directed. The biggest issue that I had in terms of the unevenness was the unevenness of the tone. And this isn't really a spoiler, but if you haven't seen it, you're going to be shocked in the first scene, especially if you're a longtime Star Trek fan. Okay. And you're very familiar with the various Star Trek shows. You're going to be shocked at the beginning of this, and it may actually ruin the entire episode for you, because it did for a lot of people. That was the kind of Twitter reactions that I was getting live as people were watching this. For me, you know, as I said, I'd already heard the spoiler, so it didn't have the impact. It didn't have the emotional impact when I watched it because I already knew it was going to happen. So the rest of the episode, I would say, is actually pretty zany and almost silly. There are moments that are serious. Again, there's a very uneven tone to this episode. And then when we end, we have another shocker. And the ending shocker, nobody spoiled me about. I kind of knew it was going to happen, but I didn't know how it was going to happen. And so I knew what was going to happen at the end. I didn't know who was going to do it. I didn't know how they were going to do it. So that was shocking to me. So actually, I kind of ended the episode like, ah! You know what I mean? Like, oh, my God. So that's kind of my general overall impression. I felt that the episode was very uneven in its tone. And it kind of goes from incredibly silly to super serious and dark and back again like a yo-yo.
Well, here are my general impressions of this particular episode. I I found it.
Bobby's back, and he has an impression there. He said James Picard Howlett.
Well, there you go. I agree with what you said. This episode is uneven. The beginning was quite a shock for me. I did not care for what happened. As I said before, they are going way out of their way to tell us this is not your dad's Trek. We got it, bad robot. Whoever, if anyone's listening, we got it. This Trek show is not really intended for me, even though you want me to watch it. I get it. That being said, I did not hate this episode, and I did have kind of fun with it from time to time. I did enjoy Picard's crazy art dealer / pirate roguish character with his accent. I think he was kind of having fun doing that. Yet again, it's Rios is the captain of the ship, right? The pilot of the ship.
Rios is the pilot.
I really like Rios a lot. Anything else, I'm going to have to get into spoilers to talk about it. My general impression was I didn't hate it. I kind of had fun with it at times, but there was some things in it that, as a longtime Star Trek fan, I did not like. There are a couple things even in relation to Star Trek Picard. Just recently, there was a couple things that happened that I didn't like. That doesn't mean that you can't enjoy the show or continue to watch it or anything. It's just, that's just my general impression. So I think that's all that, I think that's some of my general impressions.
Dave, where do you rate it in relation to the other episodes? Do you think that this is the high point for the series? Do you think it's a low point? Is it somewhere in the middle? You know, I think we both agree that episode 2 is the low point. Episode 1 is the high point so far. How does this episode compare to those other episodes in your mind?
Well, talking about, you know, the unevenness of the show, there were some moments in this that, for me, I would say I would put up there with some of the highest of high, because I had a lot of fun with it. Nothing has quite eclipsed or gotten close to whenever Picard is interacting with Data.
Right.
Nothing has come anywhere near as close to that. But beyond that, there were some really high points in this that I really enjoyed. But then the low points are so low, I'd say it's easily below episode 2. There was some stuff they did in this that I really, really did not like at all. And I don't quite still, I mean, I get it. Again, if anyone at Bad Robot and CBS hasn't got it, let me state this again. I got it. This is not your dad's Star Trek. I got it. Okay. You don't have to do anything else.
It's not your dad's Star Trek, but we can have a glass of Tranya together. But it's not your dad's Star Trek.
I know.
Did you catch that? That's not a spoiler. That's an Easter egg. That's not a spoiler.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you're going to talk about Tranya, which is a reference to the original series, you are talking about my dad's Star Trek. And you obviously want me to like this show. Because guess what? A lot of Star Trek fans, especially younger ones, haven't even seen the original series, and they don't know what Tranya is. Or Tranya. That's how you pronounce it. They don't know what that is. That was put in there for guys like me and you, Dave. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
So that when you talk about, or when I talk about unevenness, there's unevenness in the marketing of this. There's unevenness in who is this show for. You know what I mean?
Right. It was, that pretty much sums up my whole, beyond this, I've got to go into spoilers. To talk about it beyond this point, I have to go into spoilers, but I'd have to say there are moments that I would say are the lowest of the low. And there were some moments that I had a lot of fun with. I didn't think, I don't want to get into, until we get into spoilers. So that's my general impression. Let's see, where would I rate this for the other episodes? I'd say this compares for me personally pretty close to the last episode. There was some things that I really liked about the last episode and some things I wasn't too keen on. It's about the same. I've gotten over the idea that this is not Star Trek in the way in which I always think of it. And I'm now viewing this as an Elseworlds show written by someone who loves Star Wars. That is now how I'm viewing this show.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, Kurtzman has been on record. He has said he was never a Star Trek fan. He was a Star Wars fan, just like J.J. Abrams said the same thing. And of course, Kurtzman is a protege of J.J. That's a matter of record. That's not a matter of opinion. Those are things that they themselves have said. They did not like Star Trek. They were not Star Trek fans. They were Star Wars fans. So that's a matter of record.
That's not necessarily a good selling point.
No, it isn't. It isn't to hardcore fans, but it's the idea of getting quote unquote new fans. That's what they're trying to do. And of course, we've talked about the Ready Room, which is the after show that Will Wheaton does. And I actually I've been enjoying those. I've been watching those Ready Room episodes. And the first one, Michael Chabon is one of the guests. And Chabon talks about this idea of trying to basically appease everyone. This is a show for everyone. It's supposed to be for hardcore fans and for people that never saw the show. Now, every show loves to say that. Every franchise loves to say that. But the truth is, it's almost impossible to achieve that. And so you're going to alienate people one way or the other. It's just almost impossible not to do that with an established franchise. It's just the way it is. You want it to be, obviously you want to throw a big net out there, but I would say they're not throwing a big net out there. I would say swing and a miss when it comes to throwing that big net, because I think they're alienating a lot of people. They're alienating more people, I think, than they're attracting. I could be wrong. We'll talk about some numbers later in our streaming war segment that I found, because we do have the quarterly earnings report from Viacom. We'll talk about that. So we'll talk about some actual numbers. Unfortunately, that report doesn't include what's going on with Picard, because that's the last quarter, which doesn't include this time period now. But, we don't know. We don't know exactly what kind of impact this show is really having. And I can tell you, though, it is dividing the fandom quite a bit. Because I'm on Twitter, I'm very active on it, and I can see little flame wars all over the place.
Yeah, and that's why I say we kind of have to go into spoilers to talk about it into any great detail, because there's a couple things that happen in this that, like I said, I was not happy with at all. And it flies in the face of things that theoretically, I don't know. I mean, I understand that the Narada, which was the Romulan ship from the original J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie, that coming through the wormhole or time travel portal or whatever it was, after Ambassador Spock in the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie, that caused everything to be slightly different, because it basically created the Kelvin timeline. Even though, isn't this kind of still supposed to be prime timeline before that happened? Anyhow.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. The answer is kinda. That's probably the best answer, because this feels much more like a sequel to the JJ verse and Discovery than it does to Next Generation. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that. Even if you like the show, I mean, I don't think you're going to argue that. This is not. And of course, they even said that this is not a sequel to Next Generation per se, even though it is. It is a sequel to Next Generation because sequentially it happens after and it uses many of the same characters. It is, but it's not. That's why the kinda is actually probably the best description you can give, because it is and isn't. It's a different tone. It's a different color palette. Everything's different. The way it's shot.
So what
is different.
The hell isn't it?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. What is it? Well, let's go into the deep dive, Dave. Let's start really getting into this episode.
Before you get into that, I want to give my impression of your impressions. My impressions of your impressions is that I should not watch this show. The overall theme, or the overarching theme, I should say, low points.
That is one way to sum it up, Dr. Strange. low points.
All right, let's do it. So let's start at the beginning, because this is the thing that's really got people upset. It's got people very upset. I have someone that I interact with a lot tweeting Star Trek episodes on the hashtag All Star Trek, which is related to the Heroes and Icons Network. They promoted a hashtag All Star Trek where fans could watch episodes together at the same time, because H&I is a broadcast network. So as the shows are coming on, people get on Twitter, they talk about the show, they comment on it. And there's a whole group of people there that are on there regularly, have great insights, great commentary. There's also some crazies in there. I mean, just like any other group. But there were people on there that said, you know what? I'm not going to be watching Next Gen with you guys anymore, because you know what? After this episode, I am not supporting Patrick Stewart ever again. You know? So we need to talk about the beginning and this episode, the scene that is really upsetting hardcore fans. What'd you think?
Well, I was watching it, and I honestly was a little shocked. In the opening scene of this episode, again, this is a heavy spoiler filled conversation, Icheb is basically killed. He is being cut apart without anesthetic for his Borg implants. We actually watched them cut an ocular eye thing out of his head. For half a second there, I thought I was watching The Walking Dead. This looked like something they would do on The Walking Dead.
Complete with the torturer with the little buddy comment.
Yeah.
And where's your ocular implant, buddy?
Yeah.
Delivered exactly the way I just said it.
Yeah. I didn't understand it. I honestly didn't understand it, because he's in a Starfleet uniform. Later in the episode, they mention that Icheb was like on leave or something. Well, why is he in uniform? Because everybody else doesn't wear their friggin' uniform. But anyhow,
he's on leave. That didn't make any sense at all. The only reason they put him in the uniform was to give us some additional shock value, because people like us, you know, we're actually like for Starfleet in the Federation. So, and we're not going to get to see many Starfleet in this show. That's pretty well established. So they're like, oh, well, maybe this will placate guys like, you know, guys that are into this. You know, maybe they'll like seeing this Starfleet officer being tortured to death in his uniform. That's how I feel. That's what I feel.
Yeah, and then all I could think about is, where's the rescue party? Where is the rescue party? Because if he's gone missing and he's in uniform, they should be able to track his comm badge. How is it that he's laying here on this thing, he's being cut apart, and there's no rescue party? And then when someone shows up to rescue him, it's Seven, and she's by herself. Like, we keep hearing about the Fenris Rangers, but so far it's a Fenris Ranger of one. And yeah. I hated the idea.
It's the Lone Ranger. It's the Lone Ranger.
No, I get it. But here's the problem with this. I hate the idea of thinking that Icheb is out there on the fringes somewhere doing something, trying to help out Seven and her Fenris Rangers. And literally there is no one looking for him. There's no one keeping an eye on him. No one has tabs on him or is tracking him. You know, there's no Federation rescue party. And even with the Fenris Rangers, there isn't a rescue party. There's just Seven. And it's heartbreaking watching that whole scene. I felt bad watching that scene. I'm like going, I feel awful that I talked Eric into doing this whole season. I'm going to finish this season out. You know, I will. I'm curious to see what they do with this show. But I did not like having to watch Icha being tortured and killed. I didn't care for it.
I want to make a quick point here, okay? Because I think this cannot be stated enough. And this needs to be addressed. First of all, that wasn't Icha, all right? And what I mean by that wasn't Icha is it was not Manu Itri-Ami. Itri-Rami. I'm sorry, I'm butchering his name. But that wasn't the same actor, okay? And by the way, because I butchered his name, that's why I have it up there for people to see. This is Icha right here, okay? Manu, all right? The guy who got chopped up, that wasn't Manu, okay? And for anybody that's interested in maybe some of the why and all that kind of stuff, it's all over Twitter. Manu did a wonderful interview with Orville Nation, who's a friend of the show. Go to Orville Nation, watch the Manu interview. He addresses the controversy that I think got him off the A-list of Star Trek, if you will, and why he was recast. But I think it's important to note, because I want to give some love to Manu, because he's the one who made us invest into this character, okay? I'm sure the actor that played him is a fine actor. I know nothing about him, but he is not Icheb. He is not the person that made us love Icheb. I would say Voyager is probably my least favorite classic Star Trek show. That said, I still watch it quite a bit. And one of the reasons I watch it is for the later seasons with Icheb, because I like the character Icheb. Icheb was a good character. Seven was a good character. I enjoyed the episodes of Seven. I actually enjoyed Kes too, which is kind of odd because a lot of people in the fandom, they seem to be either Kes or Seven, you know? I actually appreciated both of those characters. Tuvok I like too. The other characters, not so much, okay? But Icheb was a great character. He was a reoccurring character. He brought a lot to the table. And that was Manu. Manu did all that. Manu did all the hard lifting. And what I feel has happened is these writers, what they did was they cheapened that by knowing that there are people like me who enjoyed this character, enjoyed the performance, and they basically took the cheap way out, recast the guy, apparently because of some controversies that he had, put somebody else in there, and then I'm supposed to still feel like, oh God, they killed Icheb. And now this is Seven's motivation for being the hateful, vengeful person that she is now, which she is. She's a hateful, vengeful person now. And it's because of this. It's because of this. Now, while as a fan, I could understand that, I still think it's very cheap that they recast him and that Manu wasn't involved and that they're sort of trying to use my emotions to tell their story. Which I don't think their story is all that good. But I want to make sure that we highlight Manu a little bit and the fact that he was not in this episode. So anybody who's a hardcore fan, that wasn't Icheb. Just like it wasn't Luke, even Mark Hamill said, what, that was Jake Skywalker? Well,
right, yeah.
This was not the real Icheb. This was the fake Icheb.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but in terms of the character, that's just what it felt like. You know what I mean? That we were watching them torture this character, and I just didn't like it. I didn't like having to watch that, and I hate I think the thing that I dislike the most is the idea that there are Starfleet officers out in the cosmos, and they're just kind of on their own. You know, like you're off the ship. You get into the wrong spot, even with all the technology and everything that we have at our disposal, you could get scurried away and murdered and cut apart into pieces, and no one's really going to know about it. You would think that the death of a Starfleet officer in this manner would be something that would have been on that Federation network. It would have been something that would have been covered. You would think that Picard would know that, so that when he's talking to Seven, he could have been like, I heard about what happened, you know. Like, I guess that's the thing. I'm shocked a little bit that in terms of Picard, when the Romulan evacuation didn't go his way, he gave up on everything. I mean, everything. He just threw his hands up and went, oh, well, went to his family's vineyard and basically, as far as I can tell, paid no attention to anything that was going on anywhere. There's just some stuff with this show that I don't understand. I don't understand that idea.
I want to go back to what you just said about the whole, because one thing that's been established in this world, in this version of Star Trek, is that people are always on television, even though we were told television is no longer a form of entertainment or whatever. Apparently it's a form of news. So they're still watching television, right? They still have the fake news network, the FFN, you know what I mean? All that stuff. So, and we see that. We see them looking at newscasts throughout the show. So obviously, you know, people should kind of know what's going on. It was talked about several times in this episode how special Icheb and Seven are. The reason being that they were both Delta Quadrant Borg, and that they have like implants that basically no one else really has. In fact, supposedly they were going after Icheb's cortical node when they were torturing him, although we all know, if you watch the show, Icheb doesn't have a cortical node because he gave it to Seven, but whatever. Anyway, I guess that's part of the reason that they couldn't find it, because he didn't have one. So anyway, the point is they talk about that later in the episode, how special Seven and Icheb were, that there was a they wanted Icheb for a specific reason, and Seven is very coveted for the same reason. And there is a precedence for this. In Voyager, there was an episode where the Ferengi were trying to abduct Seven because they wanted to harvest her for her Borg parts. They're very valuable, okay? So in this context, like you just said, people should know what happened to Icheb, because Icheb was a Starfleet officer. He was this famous person who was one of the survivors of the Voyager. He was a liberated Borg. The only other person that had the story even close to his was Seven. And Seven is well known. They actually, later in the episode, they're like, oh, I heard of the ex-Borg Ranger, you know? So it's like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's like even using their own continuity within the episode, it doesn't mash up. It doesn't fit. It's like a bunch of different stories kind of like mashed together, and nobody was really talking about this part versus that part and how they're supposed to flow together.
It was just really, well, we should move on from this topic, because I don't know, I don't want to drone on and on about this episode. Because there's a lot of stuff in here that bothered me.
Well, the episode...
go ahead.
Well, that opening scene has polarized the fan base incredibly. I feel like it was done deliberately. And then it's kind of funny. So the very next scene that we get, by the way, I don't remember if you remember this, but I did say that I thought that we were going to get some legacy characters that we didn't know. I just didn't know how we were going to get them. And we got two in this episode. Okay. So we got Icheb, which I think has a legitimate claim as a legacy character. He was in multiple episodes of Star Trek Voyager. They recast him. Then we get Maddox. We get our first scene with Maddox. We get to catch up with Maddox. Right. And they recast him. They didn't use the same actor for Maddox either. And so they recast Maddox. And now we find Maddox has basically, he's on the run because apparently he, you know, we know about the synth ban, and we know Maddox didn't follow the synth ban, that he's still experimenting on synths because that was his life's work, which makes sense, that he was always kind of willing to do whatever it took. I mean, he was trying to dismantle Data when we first met him in The Measure of a Man. But Maddox apparently has gone kind of underground, and because apparently all the economics that we knew about Star Trek were thrown out the window, Maddox has apparently enlisted a crime figure to finance his lab and owes this crime figure money. And this is the person that's at is it Freeport? Is that the name of the planet or the city or whatever? It's called.
I thought it was Freeport. I mean, I could
something
be wrong.
like that. So
yeah.
So he has gone there because apparently this place is infested with the criminal element. She's not Orion Syndicate, at least that's not stated, which I thought would have been neat. I mean, that would have at least been a little bit of a kind of nice thing. We do have a comment. So we do have to go back a second because the comment's about the beginning. It says, this is from Katie. She said, it shocked me the first time the opening scene happened. It took a while to resonate. After rewatching it, the violence was hard, but very realistic. Seven's soul broke when she pulled the trigger, in my opinion. I would agree with that. That's what they were going for. Absolutely. I think that's what they were going for, was that the seven we know kind of died with Icheb. I think that's exactly what they were going for. And that's what the scene was kind of meant to convey, is this is not seven. This is not your seven anymore. Your seven died with Icheb because she was betrayed and all that kind of stuff. And now she's a different person. She's clearly a different person. I would agree with that. And she says, the episode definitely took a while to think on and dissect. There were lots of stories. One thing that broke my heart as a fan was learning that after everything Janeway told Seven about, humanity failed. Now that's tough, isn't it? Because I know Katie is a hardcore Voyager fan. That's her favorite Star Trek, because I interact with her quite a bit on Twitter. And that's got to be a hard pill to swallow as a fan, to realize that, yes, because I've watched Voyager, yes, apparently everything that Janeway tried to instill in Seven is gone. And it was destroyed in that moment with Icheb.
You know, one of the things I've talked about with this show is there's a lot of symbolism. And I talked about how when we were watching the early trailers, that from Data, when he was painting the painting that was eventually revealed to be Daj or his daughter, and I was able to kind of make the connections there. I was reflecting on Katie's comments, and I think this goes even deeper and even further, because what they show us is essentially a beloved legacy character lying on sort of this gurney, whatever, right? He's in a Starfleet uniform, and what are they doing? They're cutting parts of him off to repurpose. In a weird way, I think they're telling us something about this show.
And I didn't really
clue in until I was reflecting on Katie's comments. And it's kind of, I find it kind of sad that I'm beginning, I guess, to get a broader view of how some of the people working on this show probably feel about Star Trek as a whole. Because I think that scene tells us a lot. It tells us a lot. And it kind of makes me sad. Go ahead, Eric. Sorry, I just was reflecting on her comments, and I was realizing the symbolism of that scene. That's literally what they're doing. They're stripping Star Trek for parts.
No, that's exactly what Hollywood is doing in general with legacy franchises, I think. They're taking what they want and discarding the rest. We're going to talk about something in our news segment regarding Star Wars that I think is similar. I think it's very obvious what they're doing. I don't think that it's an accident. You know, I think they're very deliberate in what they're doing. Now, so the next scene after that, we do get the introduction of Maddox again, recast, which I think is unnecessary. I don't know why we can't have the original actor come back. There could have been a contract dispute. I don't know.
Real quick.
Go ahead, Dr. Strange.
I was going to say it's Icheb. That was his name, right?
Icheb, yes. The character's name.
All right. So when he was dissected, was he wearing a Starfleet uniform?
Yes. Yes, he was wearing a Starfleet uniform while he was being dissected.
So that's essentially what they're doing to Star Trek in that scene, right?
Yes, that's Dave's observation. Yeah,
that's his observation. I missed it. I had Croc got out again. But yes, that's how I feel about it too. I think they're just destroying Trek, and yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, moving on to Maddox in the second scene, we find out that Maddox is apparently gotten in debt with a crime figure to finance his lab, because again, all the economics we were taught of Trek apparently don't apply anymore. So he's in debt to his ears. The Tal Shiar have destroyed his lab. And so he's coming back to this crime figure basically to let them know, I can't pay you because I lost my lab. So the crime figure poisons him because apparently she realizes Maddox has value to the Tal Shiar since the Tal Shiar are after him. And she's like, what was the quote? She says, making a deal with the Tal Shiar is a pain in the ass. Which again, those kind of lines, that cheesy kind of dialogue that's so modern, just takes me right out of Star Trek immediately. And that's the scene where they were drinking the Tranya. Okay. Now, the only people that know what that is are people that watch the original series. That was Clint Howard's character in the original series. He was an alien and he had Tranya. Okay. And so that's obviously an Easter egg meant for older fans who are going to be completely taken out of this because of her dealing with the Tal Shiar as a pain in the ass line. I mean, come on. That dialogue is so cheesy and it's so contemporary and silly. But anyway, that's the plan. So now we know the pieces are set, if you will.
Is Seven's this CBS All Access or Sci-Fi?
This is CBS All Access. So,
okay. Didn't sound like it from the writing.
So now Picard's ship comes to Freeport, and they're going to go down. They have this little kind of very silly scene where they get these little animatronic holograms that come up, cutesy things to, they're basically advertisements, which is also, again, completely against what we know about the economics of Trek. Granted, I don't think this is a Federation world. So we know the Ferengi and other cultures. Thank you, Katie. Katie always knows the names, and I appreciate that, Katie. Free Cloud. It's Free Cloud, not Freeport. Free Cloud. So they've gone to Free Cloud, and they get these ads, you know, these ads for different things, which is a little bit of comic relief. Again, that's kind of the uneven tone of the show. We have that scene with the scientist girl from the Daystrom Institute, where she does the little Rock'em Sock'em robot thing and punches the robot, which is obviously what that was. That was a reference right to. Now they're going to go to the planet to try to figure out how to find Maddox. And of course, Raffi apparently is like a master hacker because she was in Starfleet Intelligence, which does make sense. And she basically finds, what's that?
I was saying naturally.
Naturally. Okay. But we do know she has a background in Starfleet Intelligence. So she hacks into the system, to the net of Free Cloud. And she's able to determine that this crime figure has in fact sent a message to the Tal Shiar, and she wants to make a deal to turn over Maddox. So she comes up with this plan where they're going to use an intermediary to basically pose as an intermediary for the Tal Shiar. They're going to pretend that they're intermediaries. Now, what I had a big problem with was the way they explain this when they're in Picard's room, because they have the situation where his ready room now is basically Chateau Picard in the holodeck. So they're discussing this. And the way they discuss this plan is so convoluted, because the plan is actually really pretty straightforward. But for one thing, they come up with like this weird term. I can't remember what it was. Like, Dave, I don't know if you remember. And again, I'm bad with these new names because I don't even want to remember them. But they came up with this term of what the intermediary was, which is like a splinter or a splicer or something like that. And it was like so confusing to me because I was like, well, what the hell is that? I've never heard that term before. And all it is just an intermediary. That's all it is. It's just someone that's going to be an in-between, a go-between from one party to the other in the underworld. And it's like they took like 5 minutes for me to understand that. And Katie, again, Katie got the name. Katie, you've got a great memory. It's a facer. I was like, what the hell is a facer? You know what I mean? And why are we taking 5 minutes to explain something that's so straightforward and so simple? And that's when I was talking about earlier about direction and stuff like that, because I don't want to bag on Jonathan Frakes. I've met Jonathan Frakes. He's a very nice man. I think he's a great director. But the thing is, with that dialogue, I don't know how else you could have made that scene any better, because that dialogue was terrible. It was so contrived. It was so silly, just to tell us what the plan was. And the plan was so simple. It was like, we're going to go down there. We're going to pose as mediators for the Tal Shiar. That was the plan. That was it. And it took them like 5 minutes to explain that with a bunch of stupid dialogue that was running around in circles. They even had that moment with Elnor, where he's like, he has that comedic relief moment where he's like, "Oh, you guys are lying," because we know Elnor, you know, his culture, his upbringing was absolute candor, like from the last episode, that he doesn't lie. He's not like other Romulans, and it's like he just kind of pops in and is like, "Oh, you're lying," and it's like, gosh, man, this scene is just like. To me, it was cringeworthy, because it was just like, why are we taking so long for this very straightforward plan that you could have explained to me in one line of dialogue, you know? And that's why it becomes so silly, because the next thing they're doing, of course, is Rios dresses like a pimp, and they have a big thing about him dressing like a pimp. They have a big thing about Picard the pirate, which we have the picture of, and then Picard goes into this silly French accent. Which did start to make me laugh, because I was like, this really is silly, you know? And I did start to laugh.
God.
But it's like, we just had that. We started the show out with a torture scene, and now we've got Picard with this silly, terrible French accent. And by the way, Patrick Stewart himself has said accents are tough for him. I don't know if people are aware of this, but he did a revision of, gosh, I wish I could remember which Shakespearean play it was. But you know, I don't know if it was Hamlet. Basically, what they did was they put it in Texas. They put it like in I think it was supposed to be like either just before the Civil War or right after the Civil War. They placed the play in Texas, and Patrick Stewart was cast as the lead. And I remember him talking about how difficult the Texas accent was for him. And if you've ever seen it, he doesn't do a great job with the accent, because he's not good at accents. And you can see that in this episode. His accent's really cheesy. It's a very cheesy French accent. And it's meant to be, I think. It's meant to be comedic. It's meant to kind of contrast with the horrific scene we started with and give us some lighthearted fare, if you will. Katie has another comment. She said, I think Elnor is going to be the next Icheb, son figure to Seven. That's why he's so naive. It's trying to make you think of young candid Seven. I'm going to disagree with that a little bit, Katie, because I've seen actually what, I don't know if you saw the Ready Room, but I did see what the actor who plays Elnor said. And I think Elnor is clearly supposed to be a son to Picard. He looks up to Picard as a father figure. And that's just something that he said in the Ready Room with his interview to Will Wheaton. So I do kind of see the parallel of Icheb to Seven as far as what their journey might be, if you will. But this show, keep in mind something. This show is halfway done. We've only got 5 episodes left. And remember, these episodes are running usually 45 minutes. They're not full hour-long episodes. We've only got 5 episodes left. And we still have not got Soji and Picard together yet. And that's the whole point of the show.
Mm-hmm.
The entire point of the show is to get Picard with Soji. All right? This is the halfway point. He finally found Maddox. Okay? But we only got 5 episodes to go. And we're not talking 5 hours. Says, yeah, now I remember. Evan, Evangoria talking to Wheaton. Okay. So you did see the ready room, Katie. So yeah, so I think Elnor is supposed to be like a son to Picard. That's their relationship. It's like a father-son figure as far as those two go. But anyway, what ends up happening, of course, is they do go to the surface in their costumes. There's a little side story on this that I thought was a little weird. And Dave, you've been kind of silent, so I want your take on this because we've talked about Raffi before. What did you think about the little side story of Raffi's revelation of basically being a horrible mother and having an estranged son?
Well, for half a second there, I was excited because it seemed like she was about to beam off the show.
Oh, boy.
I was, and it literally in my heart of hearts, I was like going, she's out of here. She's gone. All right, good. And then we get the scene with her son, who's with the Romulan lady, and she's pregnant. And he doesn't like her because his mom abandoned him. But, you know, I get we're doing the whole substance abuse angle with Raffi. I get that. I'm going to be honest with you. It just felt like we were just marking time until we got back to the main story. And then, of course, eventually she shows back up on the ship at the end of the episode. I'm hoping that eventually we see more of her in an adventurous role and not quite so, you know, this all sucks. Leave me alone. I'm here for my own personal interest. I don't know. There's just a lot of things about this show that's been bugging me. And here's the shocking thing, okay? Here's the shocking thing. I think I like Discovery better. I think I like Discovery better than Picard. I mean, we got 5 episodes for them to turn me around. I read some rumors on the internet that the Pike show is being heavily talked about. There's some rumors floating around that it may be the next Star Trek show. So maybe after season 1 of Picard is done, Eric, we can hopefully look forward to a Pike show. Maybe a Pike show will be better. Because I'm telling you right now, I find myself going, I think I'm ready to go back to Discovery now.
oh, boy.
That's how I'm feeling about it. But for half a second, I was excited. I was like going, Raffi's off the show. Rock on. And then she's back. So that's how I felt about Raffi's side story. It was like, well, hell, she's back. Whatever.
I think what we're setting up, and this is a prediction, we'll see if it's correct or not, but because of what the actress has said and as far as why she got involved and what she's trying to accomplish, I think she's going to relapse. I think that's what that was supposed to do. That's going to be a setup for the relapse. So you heard it here. That's my prediction is that we're setting up a relapse for Raffi, and she's going to do something really stupid because she's back on the hookah or whatever it is, the snake oil.
Well, I want to
snake weed.
Add a comment to that. I believe that's going to happen as well, just simply because, as you were talking about earlier, humanity failed. So I guess they're exploring the failures of humanity in this show. I mean, that's what I'm gathering from how everybody's talking about.
No, that's actually pretty accurate. And I did forget, I wanted to go back and say, because we talked about this before it even happened, because Jeri Ryan did prepare us for this. She said in interviews that she's not a fan of Picard. And of course, we get another intro of Picard to a character, and she hates him. And she thinks that he's an idiot. And, you know, it's like Picard, again, you just were talking about human failings. It's like now we're being told Picard is just a total failure and everybody hates him. Everybody who meets him thinks he is a jerk and that he is responsible for everything when he's not. And again, it's kind of like the problem is that the writers are not even following their own continuity. They're not even following their own setup in the story because Picard is not responsible for any of this. Picard was the one person trying to help the situation and he resigned over this and everybody knows it. And he was just in a broadcast on FNN, you know, the fake news network. He was just on it talking about, you know, the fact that this is why I left Starfleet. So everybody should know. And everybody does know. Every time, and that's the other thing. One thing that I thought was kind of silly about this was Picard goes down in the outfit that we can see pictured here, which for listeners, if you haven't seen the show, Picard is wearing a beret and he's wearing an eye patch. Okay. And he goes down with his French accent, and he's supposed to be, the idea is they're going to trade Seven for Maddox, okay? Because Seven has all those beautiful Delta Quadrant Borg parts that are very valuable. So they're going to trade Seven for Maddox. And so they come down and say that that's their deal. Picard is negotiating. And eventually, of course, what happens is we find out that this criminal figure is the person responsible for killing Icheb. She was the one harvest. She was the one that was directing this operation to harvest Icheb. And she was, you know, Seven and her have a history. And apparently this woman actually betrayed Seven. Like she pretended she was going to help Seven, and she betrayed him to get to Egypt.
So I seem to get the subtext from the interaction between Seven and this other character that the betrayal, while, you know, Egypt was murdered essentially by this character at their direction, I also kind of got the feeling that maybe there was something else going on between these two. Was that just me?
No, I think that there's kind of like that. She seems deeply betrayed, right? Yeah. So it does seem if it wasn't a deep friendship, it could have been a little bit more. Yeah. So I definitely feel that there was something. It's personal. It's very personal between the two of them. You get that. You get that in the dialogue and in Jerry Ryan's performance that, yeah, this is a personal situation. She's taken this very personally. Now, she does say, what she says is, of course, that Icheb was like a son to her. In fact, Seven calls Icheb her son when we didn't even mention this. She actually mercy kills him. We didn't mention this. She mercy kills him. She kills him, literally, because he's in such pain and is going to die anyway, apparently. That's what she says. That's why she hates this person. Katie mentions with Picard, he's wearing an eye patch on the same side of the eye that Icheb's eye was taken out. How sentimental. I didn't catch that. I don't know if that was intentional or not. It might have been intentional with the writers. To do that, to maybe, I don't know. That's one of those things where I think they think they're being clever, maybe. But I don't think it has any other significance, because I think as it was depicted, Picard was the one who just picked where to put it and all that kind of stuff. And anyway, we get to this point where they're going to do this deal. We find out that Seven and this lady, this criminal kingpin, have a history. Seven's obviously very upset. Very vengeful. She gets into a position where she can kill this criminal crime person. And Picard is like, you know, no, you know, like Picard is still trying to be Picard and say, you know, this isn't right. You know, vengeance isn't going to get you anywhere. That kind of a thing, kind of putting a little bit of that, you know, old style Trek in this episode and say that we shouldn't do this. And so ultimately, they decide not to do this, and they decide to just leave with Maddox. They leave with Maddox. They get back up to the ship. And once they get back up to the ship, it turns out that Maddox is in very bad shape because Maddox has been tortured. They put him under care because they have this automated system that can care for him. Interestingly enough, the EMH isn't really around. The EMH doesn't pop up until later. As you mentioned, Raffi comes back to the ship after having this terrible experience with her son. It didn't really go anywhere. And we're left with Maddox and the scientist from the Daystrom Institute, who we found out apparently had a romantic relationship with Maddox. There was a scene where she was reviewing some, like, basically home movies of her and Maddox, and they kiss. So apparently they had a romantic relationship. Now, this was the scene that I didn't really know about. I knew Maddox was going to die, but I didn't know how or why. Because that got leaked to me about Maddox dying, but I didn't know how or why. And so this is the shocking end to the episode, is she kills him. She kills Maddox, and she mentions that she wished she didn't know what she knows, which we can assume means that the head of Starfleet Intelligence, the Commodore, showed her something about what Soji's going to do. So we now know that we have essentially a sleeper agent in Picard's crew. And she murders Maddox, and that's basically the end of the episode. And I was pretty shocked by that. I knew Maddox was going to die, so I was waiting and was like, how's he going to die? I thought he was just going to die from his injuries. And I was a little bit shocked that he was murdered, and apparently now we know there is a sleeper agent on Picard's ship. Do you have any reaction to that, Dave?
Yes, so much for the funny comic relief doctor character. That came to an end real quick. You know, Katie's got some comments over here. If you would put those up and let's go over them.
I'm doing them in reverse. Okay. So I can't pronounce that name, Katie. That's the criminal figure, I believe. But Jaisal manipulated Seven into thinking she was good. She was probably Seven's first female friend outside of Janeway. And that is why the betrayal was so deep. Now, she used Anika's human innocence. And that is telling, by the way. I forgot about that she doesn't call her Seven. She calls her Anika, which is kind of weird because Seven, even now, doesn't use Anika as her name. Everybody calls her Seven. Even on the ship, Picard calls her Seven of Nine the first time he sees her. So that is telling, and I think that kind of alludes to, Dave, what you were talking about, the fact that she says Anika instead of Seven.
Right.
Keep calling her Anika.
But this is the main comment I wanted to highlight.
It says, I don't think the relationship with anything else. However, where in the heck is Chakotay and Janeway? Don't make them villains. They would never have allowed Seven to be down on the path she is. And I agree with you. I agree with you, Katie, because that's not the way that was not the relationship they had in Voyager at all.
And that's kind of the thing I wanted to bring up. Having watched Voyager, we know how much that Janeway sacrificed in order to make sure that Seven had a better ending than what she would have had Janeway not intervened. So the whole time I'm watching all this stuff unfolding with Seven, I'm going, okay, so the Narada going through the time travel thing and them going after Spock caused this too? Like, how is... And that's kind of my thing with this show. It's like there's no general through line that tends to make sense, because all I could think of was the same thing. It's like, well, where's Chakotay? Where's Janeway? I mean, if when we saw Seven and they were rescuing Icheb, if Janeway had been with Seven and she would have been a Starfleet Admiral, and then Seven could have been in her Fenris Ranger outfit, that would have been an interesting scene. And then we would realize the Federation had been looking for him and that they hadn't just left him out there to die. And we could have seen the heartbreak, and it would explain maybe why Janeway has had to take a little bit of a step back. But we don't. That's the thing with this show. They're just shocking us with stuff. They're not. I mean, I hope they've got an explanation for this, because I also found it weird when you consider how much sacrifice that Janeway went through to make sure that Seven had a better outcome for her life, when we know from watching Voyager. And then we find Seven in the place in which we find her. I don't understand how this is supposed to. I mean, I know it's not supposed to sync up anymore, but I'm still kind of shocked that the Narada traveling back in time did this much damage.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think the only way you can really look at this is it's an alternate timeline. You know, I go all the way back to Enterprise with some of my problems when continuity started to get really bad. And I can only enjoy Enterprise as an alternate timeline. And I do enjoy it as an alternate timeline because I think the cast is good. I love Scott Bakula. But I can't enjoy it as like mainstream Trek because there's too many contradictions. It just doesn't sync up with the original series at all. Discovery does not sync up with the original series at all. And actually, Discovery doesn't sync up with Enterprise, interestingly enough. There's tons of inconsistencies between Enterprise and Discovery. So, that's sometimes, you know, Dave, you and I have talked before about this sort of Elseworlds idea. It can relate it back to our main topic because we're going to be talking about the Joker and the fact that, you know, Phoenix's version of the Joker, in many ways, at least to me, is an Elseworlds Joker. He's not my definitive Joker. We're going to talk about my definitive Joker later, by the way, in part two of our Joker retrospective. So in some ways, I feel like that's kind of the way you have to look at Star Trek. I wish the producers would be honest and the writers would be honest and just say that. That's one thing I will give to J.J. Abrams in the Kelvin verse, is that that is a definitive other universe, alternate reality. And it doesn't even try to pretend it's canon. What I really have the problems with, and I, like I said, I think it started with Enterprise. Enterprise had numerous continuity problems. They're really bad in Discovery, and they're probably worse in Picard, because Picard has so many legacy characters in it that they're kind of ruining, you know? So I think to put it sort of on a positive spin, I think you have, if you're going to keep watching this show and you're a hardcore fan, you need to just start looking at it as an alternate reality. This is not canon.
And that's kind of what I said at the beginning of the episode, is that I have resigned myself, as we're moving forward, to look at the show as an Elseworlds story written by people who like Star Wars, because that's basically what this is. The scene where Seven slipped out of the handcuffs and grabbed whatever her name is by the throat, and then all the dudes, like her bodyguard and the lizard guy, and everybody started pulling out guns and pointing them at each other. All I could think of is, like, this feels like a scene from Solo or Force Awakens or any one of the new Star Wars movies.
I was going to say, I also like to add that the new Disney Star Wars movies, they brought in legacy characters to die, which seems like what they're doing on Star Trek as well in Picard.
It does seem to be that way. Tell us, Dr. Strange, are you probably more of a Star Wars fan than a Star Trek fan? I'm kind of getting that vibe.
Yes, only because I have very, very strong relations to the dark side.
Interesting. let me talk about the few things I kind of liked, because I'm feeling kind of bad for having convinced Eric to do the whole first season of Picard now. Let's see. I kind of liked all the weird outfit stuff in the space bar. I thought that was kind of fun. It was kind of silly at times, but I thought it was kind of fun. I really like Rios. I really like Rios. Right now, he's the only character I could say on the show I really kind of like, besides Dodge, who's dead. And I like Dicheb too. He's also dead. He was barely on the show. I honestly don't have much else to say about this show. It saddens me that, because I know that supposedly they were looking at Logan, or they were inspired by Logan, and what Logan did with Wolverine's story in terms of moving it forward in the timeline and showing us a future that's very different from what we expected, but give us a very interesting and entertaining story. I don't feel like that right now we're getting a very interesting and entertaining story. We're just getting some weirdly shocking, I see the therapy cats are back. Weird, shocking stuff. And I don't know how to feel about it. I'm still kind of holding out that maybe by the time we get closer to the finale, there'll be an interesting reveal, like Lore is back and he's behind everything. And maybe that might be kind of fun.
If it's fun, it's that, not going to happen. Remember.
That does seem to possibly be the case. And I was a little shocked when the scientist lady killed Maddox. And then I was like, I don't understand what's going on in this show. So
neither do the writers, it seems.
No, it's they don't. It's a very schizophrenic show. It's schizophrenic and it's bipolar. It really is. And we're going to be talking about Joker later and get into that view of mental illness. But that's kind of what this episode was. You know what I mean? So
yeah, it's
a view into mental illness. And it really is bipolar, because it's kind of funny. I could kind of see what they were doing. Maybe, and it kind of worked. Because the episode got so silly at one point, I almost forgot about Ichab, you know, because it was just so silly. And I was laughing and stuff like that. And Picard's accent is terrible, you know, and he's supposed to be French. And it's kind of like, okay, so it's almost like you're just making fun of the show now, you know, because this English actor
is Sean Connery's Spanish accent.
Where did Sean Connery do the Spanish accent? What movie did he do the Spanish accent in?
Highlander.
Oh, I like him. I like Highlander. So I'm not gonna say anything bad about Sean Connery's accent, because I actually like Highlander a lot. I own it. I actually own the 10 special edition of it. So I'm not gonna say anything bad about Highlander. I'm not gonna drag Highlander into this mess. I will say this. This is, again, my positive note. First of all, love for Manu. Please support Manu. He has some good texts. He's been doing some good tweets out there. A lot of people have been supporting him. Love for Manu. Check out Orville Nation's interview with him, because that's the real Ichab. Ichab still lives. We should start that hashtag. Ichab still lives. And the other thing is, if you're a hardcore fan, you have to view this as a alternate universe. Otherwise, you're going to go insane. You're going to go right down the rabbit hole.
Treated by me.
Treated by Doctor Strange. Let's give one of our viewers the last word on this segment, because we're already over an hour on this. So Bobby says, space, the bipolar frontier. You nailed the bipolar aspect. Thank you, Bobby, because that's how I felt about the episode. So let's is that okay, Dave? Can we leave it with Bobby with the last word on this subject?
No. Yeah, I'm ready to move on. I feel like way to go, Bobby. I like that. Space, the bipolar frontier.
In fact, that's when I recut this again, Bobby, thank you. When I recut this, I'm probably going to use that.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and find the live show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.